Good evening and happy new year. Happy 2018. We made it, people. The world did not end in 2017, and it looks like we're going to hopefully have a very happy and healthy 2018. I hope 2017 treated you all right, and I hope you're really getting up to take on 2018 strong. This is a very special edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. Normally, we record this show live, and we have you guys calling in, we go back and forth. Well, luckily enough, the powers to be at the Torch were able to give us the day off from recording the show, so we were able to spend New Year's Day with our families. But we did not want to miss the show, therefore we recorded this show a little ahead of time just for transparency purposes. We are recording this show on December 17th, so if anything that we miss or anything seems outdated, just know that's when we recorded this show. But, as always, the conversation never really ends. You can always send an email to the show, and we will read that email on the show whenever we are back recording live. The email address, as always, is MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. Send an email any time of day, and we will definitely look at that and look to get that on the show. So for this very special edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans, we have a special guest returning after quite a lengthy absence from the show. We've got Rick Monsey. Rick, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Now, quick, Rick, how was your 2017 overall? You don't got to get into any specifics, but what grade would you give 2017?
2017 was pretty good. I would give it a solid C plus to B minus, which is pretty good as far as being able to, you know, get your work in there and social life. And, of course, MMA. And MMA is the one that's dragging the grade down a little bit as far as the year as a whole. But it was a good year. I'm looking forward to some of the subjects we got on this show so I can kind of point them out.
Well, if MMA is what's dragging your grade down, that sounds like it was a pretty good year then.
Yeah, exactly.
Being that it's a wrestling show, though, I should have asked you how many the star grade that you were going to give.
Oh, yeah.
2017.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. If we were filming this in Tokyo, I'm sure it would get 6 stars, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. This is a solid WWE main event style year for me so far. You know, 3.5 stars, maybe 4. Not 5, though. Not going to go crazy.
All right, let's jump right into this. And what this show is going to be, last week, myself and Zach Haydorn, we took a look back at 2017 in MMA. Well, we're in 2018 now. 2017 has been put to rest, people. It is gone. So let's look forward to 2018 and kind of project what's in store for the year. So I think a good place to start will be to ask, what will be the biggest news story in MMA in 2018? What do you think, Rick?
I think the biggest news story will be where the UFC's ends up broadcasting their product. Their 7-year partnership with Fox expires next year, and then hopefully there'll be a bidding war to see where they land, and the new deal will have big ramifications in the UFC and in MMA in general.
I literally have the same exact thing written down. I have the TV deal, and I think people aren't realizing how big of a deal this round of TV negotiations is going to be for both the WWE and the UFC. TV is a completely different medium than it was the last time these contracts were negotiated. So you wonder, are live sports more valuable? Are they less valuable now in this area of cord cutting? Rick, do you think they're going to be satisfied with the deal they get?
I think they'll be satisfied depending on the money more than the network itself. I think that if they stay with Fox, that's great, but they want a lot of money. I think if they go with ESPN, I think it's just all to cushion the blow that the new owners have from acquiring the UFC product. And me personally, I have a vested interest in where they go just because I've, as you mentioned, the cord cutting. I've navigated all my cord cutting uses to where I can still get Fox and everything like that. But if they shift to ESPN and stuff like that, there's going to be a lot of other people, including myself, will then have to figure out a way to go that route. And so with UFC changing their broadcast partner, they're also changing the way the audience watches their entertainment, especially if they cord cut it and they're going through all these different routes to access the live TV.
Yeah, and wherever they end up, I think accessibility to cord cutters will be a vital part of the future of the UFC. It might not yield them a ton of money in the immediate future, But I think, as we've already seen, MMA consumers live on the internet. That is sort of their domain where they discover and interact with MMA. And I think even more so than fans of other sports, because other sports still operate so much on linear television, whereas even every UFC event, to watch the entire event, you must be streaming. So I think you have a streaming savvy fan base. Do you think that they're going to be on a single network, or are you buying into this idea that it's going to be spread across through multiple platforms that include both digital and traditional linear TV?
Well, if they do if they spread it out, I think that one of my honorable mentions for biggest stories of 2018 would have been UFC Fight Pass and what they'll do with it. And I think that'll be a big factor in it. And I think that if it becomes Fox, then they'll just do the Fox, Fox Sports 2, and then sometimes FXX. But if it's ESPN, or were you talking like multiple broadcast channels for different events? Or were you thinking a singular, like an ESPN? Or do you think they actually could go ABC, then Fox, or shop around?
I think Dana White has intimated in the past that he wants a deal like that, the way other sports leagues have, where you're going across. I don't think that's what they get, though. I don't think there's enough demand for the product that you can spread it off through multiple broadcast networks.
No, neither do I. Yeah.
I do think there could be a streaming deal brokered in that's separate from their television deal, though. I could see something there where maybe an Amazon Prime or even Twitter gets a portion of their inventory along with a television network, the way that's happened with the NFL. Do you think that's a possibility?
Yeah, and I think that would be really smart for Amazon Prime or a company like that to do that. I think if the UFC doesn't do that, then soccer will. I think one of the two sports will be the ones that goes along with that. And I think that's an evolution in live sports that is coming soon. And it'd be cool if UFC can jump on that.
It's interesting you bring up soccer. I feel like soccer and MMA, specifically UFC, are strangely linked together as far as the landscape of sports go, because they both, in America at least, they have huge followings but sit on the fringes of what we consider the top of the fold sports in this country. They tend to occupy another space, and yet they have dedicated fan bases that will find them wherever they're at. So I think there is a bit of a coup in getting the rights to them. And I think the global factor to both of those sports is definitely interesting and definitely something worth keeping an eye on. Do you have an official prediction of where the UFC ends up?
I think they'll stay with Fox, inevitably. Without the UFC, Fox Sports 1 is going to be a ghost town. And I think Fox knows that. I feel like ESPN's been cutting a lot of expenses lately, these past couple of years, and I just don't see them doing that in hoping that they spend all this money acquiring the UFC. And then, yeah, so, and then Showtime, I know that Showtime's a possibility out there, and since they've been working with the UFC with the Conor McGregor fight, everybody seems to be friends again. But I personally hope Showtime doesn't do it, because I like watching their boxing events, and they seem to barely have room for boxing, let alone incorporating UFC into their system. So I hope they stay with Fox, and then that maybe they can focus their energy on the UFC, and that partnership will continue. How about you?
I think Fox is where I'm leaning, but the news this past week kind of makes me think not so much. I say this past week as if we're doing this live. Like I said, we're on the 17th of December. But Disney has acquired a ton of Fox property over the last week, which doesn't directly affect anything they have going on with the UFC, because they didn't really touch Fox Sports or Fox Sports 1. Those properties are still controlled by the Murdoch News Corp end of things. But what does make it interesting is, especially now during college football season, which is we're at the tail end of, with the broad array that Fox has of networks, they've been able to put events every now and then. You have like a UFC fight night on FXX. That's not an option anymore in the new system. So I wonder if things will be more compacted where despite the money, it might not be worth it to the UFC to stick with Fox. I don't know. I think that's where they go. I think the sleeper is the Turner networks for that exact reason. I think if they go with Turner, they kind of get the best of both worlds, where they'd be exposed on a very a platform that's very widely seen, versus I think FS1 is kind of that channel that you go to because you know an event's on. Right. Whereas the Turner networks, you know, you could just be watching TBS. You might be watching a rerun of Friends or Seinfeld, and then all of a sudden an MLB game comes on. Well, instead of the MLB game coming on, it would be a UFC fight night. One thing they do lose if they go with a more traditional network that's not a sports-dedicated network, they would probably lose so much of that real estate they have of studio shows and replays. Like you said, FS1 basically is the UFC network. That is their cornerstone property that they don't have to share with any other channel. So I do think they make it back to Fox. I'm not a media expert in the sense that I don't know how much the recent dealings have to do with what will affect the UFC's bottom line. But this is MMA talk for pro wrestling fans. The TV deal in the WWE is going to be a big story, I think, going into the next year. They're about a year behind on the cycle of where the UFC is. How much do you think what the UFC does plays into what WWE ends up getting?
I think it'll be a big deal because UFC will help set the benchmark, even though they're different areas. You know, I still think they share similarities as far as fan base goes. And so I think the UFC will make their deal, whatever it ends up being, and be where they're at. And the UFC will kind of use that as a benchmark, because the UFC in the past has used other sports purchases on networks as an example of what they should be getting when they were renegotiating their deal. And they ended up coming, I think, a little disappointed at the end. And so if UFC, they'll want to do better than the UFC, even though I feel like lately with the ratings going how they are with WWE, I don't know if that's going to happen. WWE's in a rough spot as far as the renegotiations go.
And I am inclined to agree with you there, but every, you know, quote-unquote expert that I read projects a rights increase for the WWE, and it's just that even though their ratings have been going down, it's still relative to the total demise of television, and they are still able to keep such high ratings considering everything. I always laugh at how the UFC, how WWE likes to toe the line between we are sports and we are entertainment. It's something the UFC also does, but WWE is even more hilarious. When it comes to TV rights negotiations, they say we're sports. You know, we're first run television that can't be watched time shifted. But then, of course, in other instances, they always try to claim their entertainment. So I wonder how much they are going to use that UFC deal. Obviously, they will. This is just talk that we have noticing the nuances of how they speak. But it's definitely, I think, in both genres, something that we should have a keen eye for. And it'll really be diagnosing what the future of the sport is. You talked about UFC Fight Pass, and that's a very interesting theme because we've discussed a lot on this show about how UFC Fight Pass at times disappoints us. What kind of role do you see UFC Fight Pass playing in the upcoming year?
I think something needs to happen that's big. And I think that one thing that needs to happen is if the UFC renegotiates a deal and they don't, like you said, if it gets with the Turner broadcast system, and so now they can't promote some of these UFC fight nights that they normally would, like the one coming up in St. Louis, which if you look at the main card and everything, it has Pedro Sanz, it has Uriah Hall, and it's Stephen Thompson and Jeremy Stephens in the main event. But this is not really one that's going to get the ratings, in my opinion. I mean, this is going to go below most Bellator events. And so where they can put this on FS1 and get a moderate rating, and that's fine. If they get a new contract in a new channel and they can't just throw out any fight night they want to, they can throw it on Fight Pass. So I hope that might be a good thing that comes out of this. And why it's a good thing is they need to beef up Fight Pass. They can buy all the third-rung promotions they want and all the inventory of old events that they want. I think live content will bring audiences to UFC Fight Pass, just like WWE Network. I mean, I'm the one who's watching all the old ECW shows and loving my life, but I don't know how much other people are doing that. What's bringing people to the WWE Network is WrestleMania or Night of Champions and stuff like that. So if they get more aggressive with the Fight Pass, I can see things going up for them.
Yeah, it's funny. Whereas like the WWE will beat you over the head with the fact they have a streaming network, it almost feels like UFC is allergic to their streaming network, where they don't want you to know that that's what they have. I mean, they put up that one graphic for their sort of third-tier MMA events that they have. They put that up. They give no promotion to those events whatsoever. So you're just supposed
zero.
You're supposed to know. And it's a shame, too, because amongst the MMA community, like those Invicta cards get a ton of hype within the MMA community. But nobody who isn't in that bubble would know anything about them. So that is my wish, too, that they do something with Fight Pass. It's very stagnant. And I've said this many times. part of the problem is there's no reason to have it unless you absolutely need to see the bottom two fights on every card. And that's not
right.
a good enough reason for most people who don't write about MMA or, you know, do podcasts about MMA. There's not really a reason to have it. Whereas something like the WWE Network, unless you're in an area maybe with spotty Wi-Fi where buying the pay-per-views at their full price is worth it, there's almost no reason not to have it. I think that's what they need to do. They need to make it as a can't-miss product, which makes it interesting when we talk about these streaming deals, because when you have a streaming deal, you want to have streaming deals on multiple platforms. That might get very, very expensive for the consumer who has to get the Amazon Streaming Prime plus UFC Fight Pass. I don't want to see them being streamed on multiple platforms. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it needs to be very direct. Like, I don't expect them to go the way WWE Network right now, as far as, like, you know, shows just 100% being shown there, like pay-per-views and whatnot. But I think it's going to get confusing. Like, I remember when they were doing, like, prelims on Facebook or stuff like that. It's like, okay, so it's already confusing now sometimes. Okay, you go to Fight Pass here, you go to watch your pay-per-view on this channel, and then or your prelims on this channel, and then you go to watch the pay-per-view over here. You're already going three different ways. And so I think you really have to be paying attention to those sort of things. I have friends, when they ask, I get texts all the time because I'm the MMA guy. They're like, how do I watch this fight? You know, like, do I go to FS1? And I'm like, no, this one's FS2 now. And then you got to go this way and that way. So anything that can streamline that process, because you don't have that with football and other sports.
No, you don't. And even I think ESPN has got better at promoting the ESPN3 platform whenever a game is on there. And it's just harder with MMA because it's not at the forefront. And then when there's a fight in a local market, such as, like, I'm here in Albuquerque when Holly Holm fought a couple months ago on Fight Pass, I feel like nobody in the world had any idea what Fight Pass was and how to get it. So I'm definitely with you that there needs to be a recommitment to that platform. I think it'll help their overall presentation.
You know what's funny, too? You mentioned that no one in the world knew how to get a hold of Holly Holm. Well, Michael Bisping's actually kind of reaping the rewards of fighting on Fight Pass because no one saw it. You know, like, he fought GSP and he lost, but he made a lot of money. Then he has this, like, quick turnaround fighting Kevin Gastelum. But it's like it never happened. You know, no one watched that card live at 2 a.m. wherever you were at. And if you did watch the replay, you're one of the few people, you know. So,
well, you know, Bisping can't have it both ways, though, because he'll tell everyone in the world that he beat Anderson Silva, and that thing happened only on Fight Pass. So,
oh, that has to be one of the best Fight Pass only fights, too. And I love that fight. I know there was tons of controversy and everything like that, but if you want to just put him like a top 10 list, like, I still rewatch that fight once in a while. That was poetry.
No, yeah, I think that's definitely the centerpiece of the Fight Pass catalog, of the Fight Pass exclusive catalog. That's what they'll always point to as how important they in the past made Fight Pass seem. I just don't think right now they don't have the inventory of fights to put a fight like that on Fight Pass. If you have a Michael Bisping Anderson Silva fight right now with their lack of star power, that's probably the main event of a pay-per-view.
Yeah, and that's a good point, too. Star power does have a lot to do with how Fight Pass does and doesn't do. I think that Dana just wanted to do Fight Pass. I mean, didn't Fight Pass come out before WWE Network 2? I can't remember.
Yeah, no, it was actually – I mean, it's hard to say exactly because we were hearing about a WWE channel for like 5 years. But the streaming service and anything like that wasn't really confirmed. And I think it was in like 2013 that Fight Pass came out, and the network didn't come out to 2014. So I think, yeah, I've always wondered about that as well, if they wanted to beat WWE to the punch but didn't quite go all in on it, and that's what's been
right.
That's what's been holding this up the whole time.
Right. I think Dana just wanted to beat Vince. And meanwhile, when Vince ended up coming out with his network, I remember the WrestleMania, that they had it coming out in correlation with that WrestleMania. There was a bunch of technical issues that went along with that. And it was a huge headache at first for the WWE having their network. So I think UFC might have seen that. I just want to throw out one thing. If we can accomplish anything from this Fight Pass discussion, it's just this. If you order a pay-per-view through Fight Pass, I think it should be discounted. And I know they're not in the world of discounting things. The last thing they want to do is give a break to people when they're trying to pay back this huge bill that they owe from the purchase. But there is no third party. You know, if you order a pay-per-view through your cable network, there's a Time Warner or whoever is your pay-per-view provider is taking a portion from the UFC to provide that pay-per-view to its customer. If you order it directly through Fight Pass, which I do, there is no third party for the most part. I knew they do have streaming digital people that they work with, the ones that they fired for the Conor fight afterwards. But I feel like to get more people roped into Fight Pass, if you just offer 15% off or something like that, you can put on the logo of Fight Pass for pay-per-views, that will hook people into getting Fight Pass just so they can get a discount.
That's a good point. It's definitely the best of both worlds from the UFC's perspective. They get to sell a pay-per-view and sell their subscription. And if you want to read any more angry rantings about the quality of Fight Pass during MMA events, both Rick and I have on our archives on MMA Torch complaining about the streaming quality of Mayweather-McGregor and that whole scenario. So this is definitely not a new topic, and I think a pretty sore subject for both Rick and I.
Yeah, we should just call it a day on that because we're both angry old. We're both the angry old men in the Muppets who are just screaming at people from the theater when it comes to Fight Pass. I just.
All right, let's go to our first break of the evening, and we come back, we'll take a look ahead at who we think is going to have a really big 2018.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
And we're back with you on this very special New Year's edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. It is me, Robert Vallejos, joined by Rick Monsey. Now, I want to always encourage you to use our email address. Send a show to the email. Is there a topic that we're totally missing on tonight? Let us know, and we'll respond to you, and we will read your email on the air. That email address is MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALIVE. cast@gmail.com. Now, normally we would solicit our phone number to give us a call, but if you call the number now when you're listening, there will be nobody on the other line. However, I do want to put that phone number in your, put it in your Rolodex if you still have one. If you have a black book, I don't think anybody who would listen to a podcast would still have a Rolodex, but nonetheless, the number is 515-605-9345. Give us a call when we're back on the air on one of our live shows, and we'll put you on. We'll discuss. You could change the tone of the show. We can always use an extra voice or a new voice. All right, with that housekeeping out of the way, Rick, what fighters do you see having a really big 2018?
Okay, cool. So my first one is Max Holloway. I think he's going to have Frankie Edgar and Brian Ortega in his pathway to becoming the division's new main man. The one problem is for the UFC is he's a little hard to market. In some ways, you know, but I think that as a fighter, he's either going to be a transitional champion or, as I think, the big fighter of 2018 if he keeps winning professionally, impressively. Sorry. He beat Jose Aldo twice in 2017, which is amazing. And I think it's looking up for him. Really quick, my other ones is the winner of Stipe versus Francis. I'll never pronounce his last name right, but you know who I'm talking about.
Ngannou.
Thank you, Ngannou. Their fight's coming up, and either a record will be set by Stipe winning the fight and becoming the most defended heavyweight title, or Francis will become the new knockout king of the heavyweight division. And I got one more, but I don't want to go too far.
Okay, well, I have a very similar list to yours, and I'll read all three of mine. My number three is Max Holloway for many of the same reasons that you've listed. On last week's show with Zach, we talked about how maybe Max hasn't taken off as the supernova just yet, but 2017 would be the year that the foundation was laid for him to be that guy. With two solid wins over the best ever in that division, and a guy that he'll never fight Conor McGregor again, but it's always going to be hanging out there that he was the champ when McGregor stepped away and McGregor never came back to fight. I think there's something you could build up for there. Holloway's a really likable guy. I don't know if he could be a mainstream star, but he's a guy that definitely could be in that upper middle class of UFC stars that are always consistent on pay-per-view, if not spectacular. The second guy I have is Alexander Gustafsson. Here's a guy in a division, the light heavyweight division, that is such a mess all the time. And everybody's like one or two fights away from being a title contender. Gustafsson looks so good towards the tail end of the year, and he's not going to get the immediate title shot. That's going to Volkan Oezdemir against Daniel Cormier. I think we have some really good things in the future for Gustafsson. He's going to be a guy, I don't know if he'll be a champ by the end of the year, but he'll definitely be in the conversation as the top of the division. He's already there, but I think he'll be further solidified. And my number one fighter I see having a big 2018 was the same thing that Rick had, the heavyweight champ I have listed, because I don't know who that's going to be, but either way, whoever wins the Ngannou-Stipe fight, I think will benefit so greatly from that fight. If it's Stipe, you do have, on paper, the most dominant heavyweight that the UFC has ever seen as far as a champion goes, and there really won't be much question about it. And a guy who just has had such a solid UFC career. I mean, the guy's lost twice in this whole time in the UFC. One time, you know, Stefan Struve and the size difference kind of got him, and then another time he got outboxed by Junior Dos Santos, and he has avenged that loss. Francis Ngannou, nothing much more needs to be said about him. A walking, talking highlight reel who could open up a completely other market for the UFC. And he has a great personal story. And I'm not saying this to be funny or anything like that, but even his post-fight promo where he's, you know, given an anti-slavery promo, it was heartfelt. I thought that was great, even though it was kind of funny to see that. What was your top one, Rick?
I'm debating whether it's going to be Mighty Mouse or TJ Dillashaw. It depends on who wins their fight, if it happens. But that's the one that I think is the outliner right here. If Mighty Mouse and TJ actually go against each other and Mighty Mouse wins, does he stay at his own division, you know, or does he go to TJ's or to Bantamweight, or does TJ then take Mighty Mouse's title and bury the division and let them figure it out over there? I think that's the one of the biggest fights of next year that I'm looking forward to. And if it happens, and then the winner of that, I think, has bragging rights for days.
What would you rank the probability of it actually happening?
I'm as 50-50 on this as you could possibly be, because I think everybody's talking about it happening. But I would more likely see Mighty Mouse going up a division than TJ going down a division. But it sounds like they want TJ to go down. And I think that's one of the biggest outliners. And I just don't see Mighty Mouse really jumping at this opportunity. I feel like DJ is more excited about it than he is.
I'm with you that it's up in the air. I'm leaning maybe slightly towards it will happen, just because I don't think there's going to be a ton in the way so long as it's DJ going down. As long as TJ going down, I don't think DJ wants to go up. We're going to have to think of a different acronym to call these guys, though, by if they fight, because this is going to get way too confusing saying TJ, DJ every time. We're going to have to go with Mighty Mouse Dillashaw. I think I'm going to declare that as my 2018 New Year's MMA resolution, is to separate. They cannot go by their initials. It'll just get too confusing.
Oh, especially if it's the main event, too. That's just going to be ridiculous. But it'll be fun. Hopefully it happens. That's one of my wishes for 2018, is for that fight to happen. I've never said Wish and Mighty Mouse in the same sentence, but I'm excited now.
Okay, now let's turn things a little negative. Who do you see declining in 2018?
Oh, this is my favorite kind of subjects. I have a controversial pick. Should I start with four and up, or should I just start right at number one? What do you think?
Why don't we build up? You have four, so man, we're gonna have a rough year at the UFC. Let's build up to the biggest decline. So let's go four and up.
Lyoto Machida, he's number four. I think that it was pretty bad for him in 2017 with his one fight. It's not gonna get much better. I think number three is Jose Aldo. No matter if he goes on a winning streak from this point on, he's lost twice to the same guy. You know, and I think that he needs to possibly change divisions, but I just see him on the downhill slope. I don't see him fighting for a title anytime soon. And even if he looks impressive, he's still going to seem like a shell of his former self. Number two is Johnny Hendricks. He lost five of his last six fights. He is ending the year on a two-fight losing streak in a division that he can barely make weight in, which is a higher division than he's used to fighting in the past. So I think he's going to be the next Bellator disappointment story pretty soon. And I love Johnny Hendricks, so it pains me to say that. And my number one is Daniel Cormier. And I was thinking about this for a while, and I think he's coming from a devastating loss, which was a knockout, his first time he's ever been knocked out. And fighters deal with KOs different in different ways, you know, but it's – the way he lost and the way that he's a competitor, he just seems like one of the biggest, mentality-wise, the biggest competitors the UFC has got. And competitors, in my opinion, they need someone or a goal to beat. You know, they need a goal, like, to win. Like, he's an Olympic fighter, you know, wrestler, so he needs to get that gold, or he needs to do this or that. He's been champion for a while, but he's never beat the true champion. Now, after losing twice to the true champion and last time in a knockout, and now this champion being gone, I just don't see him recouping from this loss, even though he's still got the belt, and becoming the same guy he used to be.
That's a very interesting list. I think your 4-2 will make the future Bellator roster. Those are right. Those are guys, though, that are probably already in a decline, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. No, I'm definitely picking on the weak here. But I was thinking of just going with DC, but then I was like, if I'm going to talk about guys who are on the decline, anytime I can complain about people that I used to like a lot, and now I see them, like, falling farther and farther, I'll take that chance.
It's funny because MMA is one of the few sports, I guess boxing would be in the same vein, where we are subjugated to prolonged suffering with a declining athlete. In other sports, the guy would just get benched. But in MMA, we constantly see it, so it gets sadder and sadder. And I feel like at the end of everybody's career, unless they are like a GSP where they kind of retired on top the first time, everybody just ends their career looking terrible, and we forget how good they are. There's not a true Hall of Fame in the UFC, but if there was, I would like to see there be like a 5-year rule, the way there is in other sports, where you have to sort of erase the end of their career in your mind before you accurately judge them. Now, I only did one, and I had the same exact number one, but for some different reasons. I had Daniel
Cormier. Yes. I thought I was picking someone controversial.
No, awesome. But I think it's a very logical pick. It doesn't feel right because he's at such a high level currently, so it doesn't feel like he's a guy. He hasn't looked bad. I mean, I don't even think he looked bad in the Jones fight. He actually looked very good in that fight until he got hit upside the head with the foot. With that said, right. I think every indicator sort of leads to him not being very good that much longer, and it's just father time. The guy's almost 40. He's had some troubles making weight. He's been in competitive sports for the entirety of his adult life. I just think that he's a guy that's on top that maybe we don't realize. Usually when someone declines, you don't see it coming right away. It just kind of sort of happens, and then you retroactively look at, oh, we should have saw this happening to this guy. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen with Cormier. So I don't think your take was – I hate to break it to you, man. I don't think it was as controversial as you thought it was going to be.
Man, I thought I was going to blow you guys away with that one, honestly.
That's hilarious that we had the same one. Other than that, it's hard to see who's going to really decline because the top of the UFC seems to be so young right now. There's not a ton of veterans. Like, the guys the guys you listed who are clearly in decline and will probably further decline – I mean, obviously, Bisping probably only has one fight in the year, and it's going to be his last one. I don't know if we see Anderson Silva this upcoming year. It's hard to predict if the heavyweights are ever really declining because there's such a roller coaster in that division, and you're always one fight away from a title fight. I do think Daniel Cormier, the rest of his career is going to be really interesting to watch because we're finally going to see him completely divorced of John Jones for the first time in so long. Is he a better fighter because of it, or does he kind of do like you said? He doesn't have that goal to look after anymore, and it's going to catch up to him. It's very interesting to watch for sure.
Yeah, and I think also it's interesting to like see that how he's doing the commentating and everything like that. Didn't he did the commentating for the fight card that just happened on Fox, right? The Robbie Lawler Dos Anjos fight, and he's good at it. You know, I think he's, besides the fact that anyone wins by knockout, he does a little too much. But I think that he has other venues of finances, and he has other passions and whatnot. So he's filling some voids. But like you said, John Jones looming over him now forever is just going to affect him.
Yeah, and if he doesn't sustain, or he hasn't already sustained significant brain damage in his life and his fight career, I think he's a guy, he's going to be a success story at the end of his post-fight life. He's not a guy that I'm going to feel bad for because I think he has so many options. And it's going to be old news by the time this airs, but he's currently engaged in the feud with the Bullet Club and Cody Rhodes on Twitter. So there's never a dull moment for DC. For such a, like, you know, the dad vibe that he gives off, it's right. never a dull moment with the guy.
No. Let me ask you a question now that we're on the DC subject. Do you think, like, when he was a heavyweight, and I remember he went down and his first guy he was fighting was Patrick Cummins. And I was like, who's Patrick Cummins? All I cared about was seeing DC at light heavyweight because I couldn't imagine him fighting at that weight class. Now that he's been a light heavyweight so long, can you imagine him ever going back up to heavyweight? Like, do you think that if he loses his title soon, he tries to get it back? Or do you see him going up? Or is that being heavyweight a thing of the past? Because now I can't imagine him as a heavyweight anymore.
I really, really want to see it because I think it would be interesting. I think he has so much skill relative to just the heavy-handed guys in that division. I don't think it happens, though. I don't think he's so good at light heavyweight. Like we've said, you know, he's so much further advanced than everybody else but one guy in that division. Plus, he broke news a couple weeks ago that Cain Velasquez is training again, and he seems to be dead set. Whether or not that's his true feelings or that's mm-hmm. what he uses as his, you know, quote-unquote excuse not to be in the division, I don't think he's ever a heavyweight again.
Yeah, and I don't see him being Stipe Miocic anytime soon, so I think his home is light heavy.
No, and I think he could beat most of the heavyweights, but and I was sort of being dismissive of the skills of the heavyweights. Obviously, you don't want any of those hands on your face. Stipe is the exception to that, but he has a wide variety of skills and is more natural at that weight class, so I would have a really hard time picking Cormier against Stipe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got one more person to ask you about. He wasn't on my list, but he might have already been on the decline as well, so it might have been another cheap shot from me. But Damian Maia, do you see him having a good 2018, or do you see him? Because we were, you know, beginning in 2017, Damian Maia, he was a man, you know, or was one of the men. Like, he was looking like he could possibly be a champion and whatnot, but now look at him.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because like you said, I think we probably projected him to be the welterweight champion at this time if we would have had this podcast a year ago. And I think he probably is, it's hard to say how much he has truly declined, because it's not like he's looked so much slower in all these fights. I think Tyron Woodley unlocked a key to beating him that other fighters can take note of. So I don't know that it's a physical decline as much as that the puzzle has been solved.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay, let's have one more sort of big picture topic here. There's been some fight announcements going into 2018, so it's not really fair to judge the whole year. But of these upcoming events, is there any that you're in particular looking forward to?
Yeah, I like before I mentioned the Mighty Mouse TJ, you know, fight. That will be pretty cool. But I'm honestly looking forward to Robert Whittaker versus Luke Rockhold. I think that's going to be awesome. I think that's going to be a really good fight. I'm not going to be able to get all my friends to come over and watch it and pitch in. You know, it's not going to get everybody who's not an MMA guy excited. But as far as being an MMA guy, Robert Whittaker versus Luke Rockhold is going to be an awesome fight.
It's going to feel like the great cleansing, I feel, when that fight happens. And that we're finally going to get to see a middleweight title fight where we rest assured in our hearts that the winner of this fight we can say is the best middleweight in the world. I think we could have done that back when Whittaker won the interim belt as it is, but it is kind of nice that we are finally washed clean of the whole GSP Bisping saga, and that event will be the new beginning for middleweight, which I am definitely looking forward to. I'm looking forward to what we're getting right out of the gate, and this is kind of cheating because it's the most fully formed card of the year. But UFC 220, it hits on a lot of the topics we were just discussing. Stipe Miocic versus Francis Ngannou, you and I both have the winner of that fight doing great things throughout the year. Cormier versus Volkan Oezdemir, who's a guy on the previous episode I talked about what a year he had. I mean, nobody could stop Oezdemir in 2017. Not even the law could stop Oezdemir from competing for the title. So I am very much looking forward to that fight. The undercard, it is what it is, so to speak. But I think those two top-end fights are going to get us, hopefully, if those fights happen, off to a really good start throughout the year.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a really good card, actually. I some sleeper fights in there. And I think those two, as a top-heavy pay-per-view, that's fine by me. You know, that's definitely a rock 'em sock 'em sort of card.
Okay, let's go to another break, and then we'll come back and we'll continue to run down what we think will happen in MMA in 2018.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Prichard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
What was your opinion on 2017, or what do you think is going to happen in 2018? We want to know. Send an email to MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. The inbox is always open. Drop a line. Give your prediction of what's going to happen. Who's going to be the biggest fighter of the year? What's going to be the biggest disappointment? Is Daniel Cormier declining of really a hot take, or are we really seeing something into the future? Let us know. If we're still doing the show this time next year, Rick, which hopefully we are, we should definitely revisit this, and it'll be sort of our cold takes exposed to see how many things we were right about or wrong.
Yeah, exactly. I like to eat crow on that prediction because I like DC a lot. You know, it's funny that we picked the same guy. Like, I honestly thought, like, when I was typing this up, I had a lot of other options, and I was like, no one's going to pick DC. You know, like, I'm picking a champion, that's a risk.
Well, and not to dive too back deeply into that, we already discussed it, but I just think about this last couple of years. Like, nobody would have picked against Joanna Jędrzejczyk, I don't necessarily know if she's declining, or Jose Aldo, or any of those guys. It's always somebody at the top of the heap that ends up getting knocked down. So I think that's why that prediction could come true.
That's what's so exciting, though. Even, like, years back, too, like, the UFC, they don't have any power over this. Like, WWE, you know, they can push who they want, Roman Reigns. And that happens. You know, the fans can reject it and everything, but the upward transition still happens. But, you know, you got, like, Paige VanSant. The UFC desperately wanted her to be the next big star. You know, it just hasn't happened. And Uriah Hall, and ironically, the people I'm mentioning are fighting up on a fight card in January. But it just, you never know. You know, so that's why it's so fun to predict these things, and why I was looking forward to the show is because it's such a roll of the dice when it comes to MMA.
Yeah, it's one of the great things, and one of the downsides I think about MMA is that you can't control that, but there are times where you could definitely tell the promotion would like to control that. They would love for Sage Northcutt and Paige VanZant, which I feel like we always pick on those two as the disappointments of the UFC. It's kind of unfair because they shouldn't be thought of as much as they are, as young as they are into their careers. They are kind of the Roman Reigns of the UFC in that because the promotion has pushed them so hard, and then maybe they haven't delivered at that top level, they are insufficiently judged for their actual talent.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do like the idea of applying MMA booking, though, WWE booking to the UFC. So, like, in that world, I think, like, Chuck Liddell still has the title. He'd be like, mm-hmm. he'd be like Triple H, and he would only come back once every 3 years and beat whatever up and comer, and it would make no sense. And I don't know who the Undertaker would be, who just would never lose, but only would fight once a year.
I don't know either. But the Ric Flair or Terry Funk would be Don Fry. He has to be fit in there somewhere. Because Don Fry, he gives the best, like, non-politically correct promos in the entire world, and he would just be that old grizzled veteran who. Just walks around and I don't know who they are. That would be a fun game actually to try to like pick out the similarities. Like your Triple H would be Chuck Liddell, you know, and then the Roman Reigns would be a combination of Sage Northcutt and, you know, Paige VanSant. And then who would be the John Cena and who would be the John Cena honestly would be DC, I think.
Yeah. He very much fits that similar profile of John Cena, but there's not really a true John Cena in that, like, you don't have that guy that's been around for like 10 years who's been on top that people don't like but begrudgingly respect. I think DC probably is the closest. I don't know how much John Cena is going to decline in the upcoming year. I don't know if that'll be a hot take.
He just won't be around.
Yeah. We see DC everywhere, so I guess there's some difference there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, we've already talked about, I think, the big heavy topics. We talked about the TV deal, which is definitely the thing to watch, but might not be in the forefront of everybody's mind. Someone who is on the forefront of everybody's mind and with every move he makes is Conor McGregor. Where do you see McGregor in the landscape of MMA in 2018?
I think that his shadow will be looming, but he's going to put on another pair of boxing gloves in 2018. I just don't. And I agree with I forget if it was you or I think it was Zach, actually, who first pointed it out on one of your guys' last shows. That it was a couple weeks ago that Zach said, you know, UFC is going to have to come up with a way to pay him, you know, like, and I'm sure they can do it, but boxing can do it quicker. And I think he got a taste of boxing. And I think he wants to get a win in boxing. And I heard you mention that you just haven't heard, you've heard Dana White say that the fight with Pacquiao isn't going to happen, but you haven't heard enough people say that it isn't going to happen besides Dana White. So it might, you know, and I agree with you. I think the Pacquiao fight, while it won't be mad lightning in a bottle like the Mayweather fight, it'll still get Mayweather buckets and buckets of money. And whether or not that's the fight that will happen in boxing, I think that it's going to take a lot to get him back in the octagon.
Yeah, and he's always going to have that Mayweather feather in his cap as far as, you know, he took the sport of MMA to an extreme and not even being within the realm of MMA. So I don't think it matters a ton to him that he wouldn't top that by fighting Manny Pacquiao. If anything, it's a further feather that the two best boxers of the last, you know, 15 years, he was able to goad into a fight. That's an amazing accomplishment by any level. I don't think we see him, I wouldn't say never again, because I think there will be a point where he maybe does fight in the UFC again. The money will eventually get right. They will need him. I think we've discussed a lot in the past that if he comes back, it'll probably be as a partner to the UFC and co-promotion. He's never going to come back and just be a fighter. But I don't think we see him. And I, like you said, the shadow looms large. And it's so weird because he's a guy that definitely, because of his visibility and the eyeballs he brings in, you're always going to want to associate yourself with him. Kind of like the WWE does with The Rock. They always want to throw in that they have that connection to the biggest star in Hollywood. So the UFC always has an incentive to keep their wagon hitched to him. At the same time, though, you kind of need to get him out of your system in some ways if you're the UFC, in that he's set such a benchmark that every other star that they produce or that comes along seems so inferior compared to him because he's the one that did all these things first. Anyone that's, you know, talking smack after the fight and doing their things and making these ridiculous proclamations is always going to look like McGregor light. So they have to find some way to get the McGregor syndrome out of the sport, or else I think they're going to go the way of boxing, and they're already kind of going that way with their booking, but it will be very, very detrimental to the sport if everybody is just trying to be Conor McGregor and failing at it, and there's no originality amongst the stars.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that we haven't talked about, and I haven't heard talked about much in general, is like everybody's talking about, is he going to fight MMA or boxing? What happens if he goes into the movie business? Because you mentioned The Rock, and it just got me thinking. Like, obviously, WWE, you know, there's no other thing to do besides professional wrestling. I mean, you could go to MMA, but the next step, it seems, is to be an actor. You know, the Hulk Hogan did it. The Rock did it. Stone Cold kind of did it. McGregor went from one sport to the other, but he's been kind of shy for, I don't know if he hasn't been being offered roles or if he doesn't want them, but you would think a studio would be knocking at his door. I mean, they knocked at Ronda Rousey's door. Why not Conor McGregor? And so what happens if he gets a movie offer in 2018?
I think that torpedoes everything, to be honest with you. I think it's more of a wild card, maybe not as likely. He was offered a part, I can't recall the film, but he took it, and then after he lost to Nate Diaz, he actually declined it again, and Michael Bisping took it over. I can't recall the movie that it was in, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I just can't think of it off the top of my head. I'm sure that he's a guy that studios would want. I wonder if Ronda Rousey has scared studios off because the reports are that she was just a terrible actress, but I don't think that necessarily transfers to other MMA fighters. I would think, though, if he were to strike it even moderately big in the entertainment industry, it's kind of like the deal with The Rock. Like, why would you come back to, you know, training on the mat and getting your face punched in for a living when you could do something where anything physical a stuntman would have to do for you? So that's definitely something that's extremely underrated, because I think McGregor, it's always, is he coming back to the UFC? Is he going to do boxing? Will he broker something with the WWE, which I think is less likely now that Ronda Rousey seems to be in the WWE fold. But it's definitely there. He definitely fits the WWE archetype. I just don't know how the heck you would get him to follow all the direction that is required within a WWE broadcast.
You know, it's funny that I didn't even consider him going to WWE as a third option. You know, I know we have in the past, but now that he's done this Floyd Mayweather thing, he's just so, in my opinion, above that. You know, like, it's just, I don't even know how much interest he would have into making a WrestleMania appearance or anything like that. But I think for him, if he doesn't do MMA, it's a Pacquiao fight or it's Fast and Furious 12. You know, it's one or the other. And I love to see him in MMA, but I just don't see him like getting all like fired up about fighting Tony Ferguson, defending his title. Maybe part of the cleansing process you were talking about, the comparison process, is getting him off the championship, you know, getting that strap off his shoulders, because they want to be connected to him. Hey, he's still our champion, but let's be real. He's not coming back. And if he does, that's great, but it's going to be fighting. I don't think it'll be fighting Tony Ferguson. I think he wants to fight like a GSP or, you know, someone who he feels is his equivalent.
How long into the year will he have that belt for?
That's a good over-under game right there. Oh, man. That's a good question. I'm going to call it July 8th. After that, they'll strip him.
That's an oddly specific date you picked out right there. I got that. Probably sometime, mid-year sounds about right. When they finally believe it themselves, even though they may already know that he's not coming back, I think that belt is an interesting hook. We always talk about how meaningless are the belts are in MMA, and maybe they've, because of McGregor, they mean less than they ever did. At the same time, you can always have him as your champion, and as long as he doesn't fight, nobody's there to beat him. So I do wonder, right, is it going to be a case where he's gone for like 2 years and Tony Ferguson is going to have like 5 title defenses? That could get totally ridiculous. Everything that's been wacky about MMA over the last 2 years has pretty much been caused by McGregor. And it's funny that he's totally unseated everything about the normal order of the sport, but yet the promotion is still at his beck and call.
Yeah. I mean, he's only been there a little over 4 years, too. April 2013, when he made his appearance, you know, on Fuel TV. Isn't that crazy?
I would have thought that's what would become. I guess that's a good hook to get people to watch your prelims when you sort of point that out, that this guy who didn't even have that impressive record, you know, on the independent scene over there in Ireland, that's what he became. That's insane.
I know. It's like, hey, don't want to watch Mousasi versus Latifi? Guess what? Conor McGregor was on it. You missed it, you know? I remember watching that, too. And I saw him. I thought he was interesting. And then they were like, oh, we're going to get him in for the Boston show. It was the first FS1 show. He fought on the prelims of that, too. And it just went from there.
That's my first McGregor memory, was on that. That was the first FS1 show, right? When he fought
Holly. Yeah, that was a Shogun Sonnen, and that's when they were also trying to promote him. They knew they had something with him. You know, Dana says, I had a beer with them, and I knew we had something. He wasn't joking. They were sending beer coasters to pubs with McGregor's face on it for that FS1 card, and he was on the prelims.
He's a guy, too, that you can look at the example of him, of what they did with UFC Fight Pass for that one. They did. That was the first time I really remember UFC Fight Pass gaining notoriety outside of the little tiny bubble. Did he fight someone? Was it in Ireland that he fought?
He fought. He fought. And I'm not doing this totally off memory. I have Wikipedia right in front of me. But he fought Diego Brandão. But it doesn't say where that was aired. But I think that was Fight Pass, exactly. And then after that, he fought Dustin Poirier. Then he fought Dennis Seaver. So he went from a Fight Pass card in Ireland. And then he went to prelims of a pay-per-view, and then he went to main eventing his own FS1 card.
Yeah, Dennis Seaver is always going to be that interesting trivia point on who was like the last no-name opponent that fought Diaz. That's going to be that fight, Conor McGregor.
Wouldn't be sad if someone said Dustin Poirier.
Oh, man. Yeah, I guess that's – that is rough. But no, I think it does speak to our earlier conversation that if you can, maybe you should make a star scarce – an upcoming start and put them on UFC Fight Pass, because I think that probably did work very well. In this case, obviously not everybody's going to become Conor McGregor, but there's definitely a template that he has set despite all the other upheaval that he's caused.
Well, also, it's like it that show being on Fight Pass, I think, was more just because it was in Dublin, Ireland. Like, if you look, like, I'm looking at his thing, and he fought on Fuel TV, like we talked about. Then he fought Max Holloway in Boston. But then they're like, we got something. Let's put him in the main event in his home country. So if you got a star, like, let's say, for instance, you got a guy who's three, you know, won three in a row, and he's from, you know, not Brazil, sure, but like, Scotland. Let's have a Scotland card. Oh, you know, the time difference is too crazy. Won't be on FS1. Well, we got Fight Pass. You know, let's just get his whole country behind him, and maybe we can strike while it's hot.
Yeah, and that's another thing that doesn't get brought up enough, I think, with McGregor's stardom is how well they made him look like a star and how well he's been perceived as a star in his homeland. You know, they're kind of doing similar things, I think, with Stipe now, but it hasn't – that's not a whole country. Cleveland's not a country the way that Ireland is. So it doesn't quite translate. All right, let's go to our last break, and let's talk some wrestling-themed MMA when we come back.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here, I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
And we're back. We got Rick Monsey in here with Robert Vallejos, and we're looking ahead to 2018 in MMA. But this is MMA talk for pro wrestling fans, so the reason why we do this show is because despite what many people seem to perceive as two very different things that don't belong anywhere near each other, MMA and pro wrestling will forever be linked, and as the years go by, they tend to run parallel paths more often than not. 2016 actually might have been the golden year of MMA, specifically the UFC and WWE working as one with Brock Lesnar going over to fight at UFC 200. 2017 had a ton of Brock Lesnar news where it really seemed like they were building something between Brock Lesnar and Jon Jones. In the previous segment, we talked about maybe the idea of Conor McGregor coming to the UFC. And it looks like in 2018, we are going to get Ronda Rousey in at least WrestleMania, if not more, with the WWE. Rick, I want to propose this to you. How much of a interaction will we see in 2018 between pro wrestling and MMA?
I think it's dependent on what Brock Lesnar wants to do. I think that, like you said, 2016 with Brock Lesnar going back and forth, I can see that happening again. We thought it might happen 2017. It didn't. But there's no reason that it wouldn't happen. And I think that'd be great. As far as everything else goes, I just don't see them sharing stars. I see them, WWE, having Ronda Rousey, but that's about it.
What's your official prediction on Brock Lesnar's contract? I think it comes due in April.
I think he's going to try to throw in a carrot there saying, I need to, or I want to come back one last time. I don't know how many more years Brock Lesnar has, you know, that he can just train for MMA. What do you think he could fight in 2019, or do you think this is it for him?
I do, simply based on the division he's fighting in, because it's not like there's a ton of young guns that he'd be fighting in, and he would have, you know, very specific fights. So I think he can, and with his schedule, he can. Obviously, he can't fight eternally. But can he probably have a fight within the next 3 years and with his schedule where he can specifically train for it without – I mean, he has advantages that really no other fighter in all of MMA has, and how singularly focused he can be on his craft if he chooses to be, with the money he still gets from the UFC. So I think he has time. The clock is ticking, but there is a little more time than I think you're probably giving him.
Yeah. No, you bring up a good point. I mean, he does – he has wear and tear, but it's a different kind of wear and tear. I do find it. I didn't realize he was 40 years old already, though. I was just looking his age up, and so, but that's not a big deal. I mean, heavyweight's kind of an older division, and I mean, his last fight, he beat Mark Hunt. That's great, you know. Not a lot of heavyweights can say that.
No, and he is a special athlete. I think he's so unlikable in so many instances. People don't realize. And then you have the PED thing. So, oh, is he, you know, completely synthetic? The way he looks may be synthetic, but he's a different kind of athlete. Even in that Mark Hunt fight, when you see him, no other heavyweight shoots for takedowns with that kind of speed. And I know he has trouble taking a shot. I don't think any of that matters to the UFC. They need stars. They want stars. And if they can get him, I think the UFC plays a major role in his next contract. I do ultimately see him re-signing with WWE. But I think it's more than just this, we have to make a deal sort of thing where Dana and Vince have to get together and figure something out. I think the language will be much more explicit this time than during the last round.
Yeah, and I think we'll talk a little bit about 2018 and wrestling goes, but what they end up doing with Brock Lesnar, the character, in the future in relation to Roman Reigns, I think will have a big implication into his future in the WWE. Is he going to be the man from this point on, you know, and they're going to just put all their eggs in his basket? Or are they going to do what everybody thinks they're going to do and get Roman over and make Roman look good, you know, like they told CM Punk? And then what does Brock Lesnar do? He just comes back without the title and be that special attraction.
That is interesting, because although they've pushed Roman obviously very hard, and I know people joke, oh yeah, this year's going to be his third coronation at rest. Well, with Brock being there, he never really has been the guy the way – like Brock Lesnar is the most untouchable thing within that company. And I wonder if part of the healing process maybe is to get Brock completely out of the picture. And that's, you know, how they're looking at it as a way to have Roman completely solidified, because even from the aspect of breaking kayfabe and what seems legitimate and what's not, I could probably in my brain believe that a guy like Roman Reigns, as big as he is and athletic as he is, could probably in a shoot fight fare pretty well against most guys on the roster. I would give him no chance against a guy like Brock Lesnar. So I wonder how much Lesnar's presence actually harms Reigns, despite all the other things that they've done to harm Reigns' push.
Yeah, absolutely. But then what do you do with Lesnar? Do you put him on SmackDown? You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to put Roman on SmackDown. So it's like these two forces will always be intertwined. And like you said, like for me, I've been a fan of wrestling forever. I gravitate towards Brock Lesnar. But with him there, you know, I think the one thing that would help with that is what everybody wants, and that's what Todd Martin is always talking about, is, you know, Roman Reigns isn't a bad wrestler. He's just playing the wrong character. You need to turn his character, and then we need to be allowed to boo him, you know, officially. So I think they should just turn him heel and have Brock Lesnar have the cat and mouse game, and that would be huge.
Yeah, a babyface Brock Lesnar going up against a heel Roman Reigns is actually a very interesting proposition, because I think, like you said, there's a want to boo Roman. And it's weird that Brock is a guy who shuns pro wrestling fans on so many occasions, but yet those of us who go back still know he's one of us. He'll never be the UFC guy. He'll never be, you know, this other athlete. He'll never be the NCAA wrestler guy. He's always going to be that guy to us older pro wrestling fans. He's going to be our guy forever. So it's a love-hate relationship that I don't think, as it comes to UFC, they have sort of a hate-hate relationship with him. He loves the UFC, but the UFC fans seem to have total disdain for Brock Lesnar, so much so that they'll buy every pay-per-view to see him get beat, so that kind of works out. On the other hand, I feel like wrestling fans deep down do love Brock, and he's got no love for them. So I would like to see – he can always work as a face. He can go back from face and heel. But I would love to see a babyface Brock trying to overcome like the evil Roman Reigns. That would actually be a very entertaining story to tell.
It would. You know, and if for those of you guys listening out there and you've only been exposed to Brock Lesnar either in the UFC and his tenure there or the Suplex City Roman Reigns – or sorry, the Suplex City Brock Lesnar – you really need to go back to his early 2000 run when he's facing Kurt Angle and everything like that, when he was brand new. He was one of the best rookies they have ever had. He was incredible. Like, those matches he had against Kurt Angle, even Big Show, were just amazing and really good. And I think that's the Brock Lesnar I think about a lot of the time when I think about his best moments. He's having great moments now, like against AJ Styles. He had good matches, his three-way, him, Seth Rollins, and I forgot the third person in it, he's had great John Cena. Yeah, that was great. You know, like, and he's had, and then that time when he just destroyed John Cena at the SummerSlam, all those moments are great, but he's had some other epic moments over a decade ago that people need to revisit on the network.
Yeah, and I think those of us who hold that soft spot for him, that's sort of, we know that's there. So we know he sort of put in his sweat equity, as short as it was. Anyone who wants to watch any of those matches, not including the whole Kurt Angle series, because that was very good, I would say look at his coronation against The Rock at SummerSlam or two, or the match at No Way Out 2004 against Eddie Guerrero. Eddie Guerrero was like, you know, three times as little as Brock, and they had a phenomenal match. I can watch that probably about once every 6 months, and I still don't think Eddie's really going to win, and when he pulls it out, I get as excited as the little kid I was when I actually watched it.
Yeah, that was one of the greatest frog splashes in wrestling history, when he hit that on Brock Lesnar. Like, I think Goldberg speared Lesnar, right? And then, like, Eddie went up, and it was just, that was epic. That whole pay-per-view, that match, I remember really well. The lighting in it was dark, but the ring was, like, bright and silver, and yeah, that was great. That was, like, right before Brock left.
Too, it was a month before WrestleMania. That horrendous match you have with Goldberg at WrestleMania 20.
Oh, so bad. So good, though.
Now, Brock Lesnar is probably the most successful guy to ever go between both worlds. Maybe the most unsuccessful guy would be CM Punk. CM Punk MMA in 2017. Are we going to have any in 2018?
Yeah, we're going to have some in 2018. Now, you said MMA. Whether it's UFC or not, I'm still not convinced. I do think that wherever he goes, I actually think I'm just dictating what I heard you guys say a couple weeks ago, but I agreed with it. We are going to see him fight. And I remember you guys said this, that wherever he ends up fighting, they will make money and it'll be successful. I think the UFC will want to keep him. I don't think they're going to let him go to Bellator or anything like that. I do believe he has at least one more fight on his contract, right? So he will fight. I just don't know if it's a good idea or not, because every time he does it, it kind of makes the UFC look a little bad.
It's funny, too, because some people will look at the signing of CM Punk as the beginning of this new era of just doing what makes you money versus what's the right fight. But in actuality, if CM Punk were to enter the UFC now, at the dawn of 2018, he would fit in much better than he did even in 2014. Because now it seems like they're more apt to promote guys like Kobe Covington and the like to really play that heel role more. So I think McGregor kind of unlocked that. I think now if a guy like CM Punk, the problem is he has such reverence for MMA that I don't think he would ever do it. But if he were ever just to turn into that same CM Punk that us wrestling fans know, I think it would be a heck of an entertaining proposition. That's why I think if he was in something like Bellator, they would just let Chael Sonnen do all kinds of weird stuff on Bellator broadcasts. Can you imagine what they could do with a CM Punk in the middle of a Bellator fight card? If all of a sudden he just comes out, sits Indian style, and cuts like a 10-minute shoot promo on the rest of the fighters?
That would be great.
It would. It has nothing to do with the integrity of the sport. Fighters cut promos all the time. I think that's something that they miss in this whole CM Punk MMA experiment.
Absolutely. Can you imagine just sitting there, like, ripping on Scott Coker, like, in between a round, like, just tearing him apart? You know what I think would be a great idea for UFC to do, and if they do this, they owe me money, because it's my idea, is that they know he's going to lose. No matter who they match him up with next, he's probably going to lose. You know, it's ridiculous. I agree with Wade Keller when Wade Keller has said, you know, it's kind of hilarious to think a guy at his age with his limited experience could transition to MMA just because he has a karate style, you know, and he's a wrestler, professional wrestler. It just doesn't really make sense. That being said, put him back in the octagon with the knowledge that he'll lose. You'll get eyeballs on there and pit him against Mike Perry. You know, Mike Perry just had a loss, but fans love him. They want to see him destroy their CM Punk. And maybe CM Punk can do a promo on Mike Perry, and then Platinum just kills him.
Wow.
You know, not literally kills him, but yeah, just like.
You know what, though? I'll give you credit on that one, Rick. That is a great idea from levels that I don't even know if you are considering, just because this is not a political show, but when you think of the, you know, the maybe liberal left-wing politics or culture that CM Punk used to represent, at least, and the sort of old-school conservative UFC style that a guy like Mike Perry seems to represent, that would be a phenomenal clash of styles.
They should just have a political, like, yeah, exactly, when they're doing the press conference and stuff like that. They just should come out one in red and one in blue.
Yeah.
You know, and then...
that would be, though, that fight, though, would probably win the award for worst tattoos ever in a fight between those two guys.
Yeah, it would be great. I'd book it. Book it now.
I didn't think we'd be talking about Mike Perry versus CM Punk on today, but hey, 2018, anything can happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I don't want to get off course here or anything like that, but I would be interested to hear what you think Ronda Rousey, what her deal will be like, since we're talking about MMA and wrestling. Do you think it'll be a success?
Yeah, that was kind of going to be the direction I was going to go in next. Anyway, I don't know. Will it be a success? Yes. I think the WWE will get a ton of mainstream coverage off of it. I think they'll draw network subscriptions. They'll be enhanced business-wise by what they do. I don't think she will translate well at all to the hardcore fan base. Talked about this a little last week. I think she has everything working against her. For the people who listen to podcasts like this, and you know, who are on Twitter and on the message boards constantly, that hardcore fan base, I think she is everything they detest about celebrity involvement in wrestling. Even though she's more than just a celebrity, obviously she's a legitimate athlete. I think that'll go very bad for her. So it'll be one of those weird things that we're gonna see highlights of it 5 years from now, and it'll be sort of projected as this great moment in WWE history. Yet the whole WrestleMania building was booing her out of the arena, and it's edited. What do you think?
I completely agree. I think that anything she ends up doing will be. I think I'm stealing from Todd Martin on this one, but anything she ends up doing is going to be associated with Stephanie McMahon, you know, and the more Stephanie McMahon I see, the less I'm happy. And Ronda Rousey, I'm not a big fan in general. She didn't leave the MMA sport on a high note, you know, it kind of got us a little sour. So I think that she went into my MMA. It was entertaining while it was. And I had a blast watching her get blasted in her last two fights. And then she was gone. I was like, great. Now she's encroaching into my other world. And now there's Stephanie McMahon who's going to, I don't know who would be the heel in that situation. If they just said nothing and they're both standing next to each other in a ring, I don't know who I dislike more at this point, Stephanie McMahon or Ronda Rousey. Honestly, it's just like – and then it's going to be watching these athletes, these wrestlers. Like as soon as Ronda Rousey gets in there and smashes through Charlotte Flair, I'm just going to be pissed.
And I think that's what's going to rub so many of those hardcore fans the wrong way. They hate when stuff like that happens. I don't mind it as much it's less so when Maria Menounos is out there fighting the other women. That looks ridiculous because she's a television host. I can believe that a UFC champion could fare well against the kayfabe land against a WWE champion. But I just don't think too many are going to take too kindly to that proposition. I think here's the other thing that I said last week, but I think it bears, or 2 weeks ago, bears repeating. I don't think she's going to be that good of a promo. She was a good smack talker, but I don't ever think it was that much of an act with her. I think she would get herself fired up and say these things to these other women. And she wasn't, when she was trying to do it against Holly Holm to manufacture stuff, it really wasn't that good and that entertaining. And I think that'll be the case here because she won't have genuine animosity towards someone like Charlotte. I don't think she's going to be that good of a promo.
Yeah, neither do I. And I think I remember I didn't read her book, but Todd Martin reviewed it once. And he said there's a lot of points when she would talk about an ex-boyfriend or talk about someone and she would personalize it in an interesting way. And I think she did that in MMA because it was a fight, you know, like she got really like personal and she got real. She twisted things in so she could get passionate about it. But like you said, like in wrestling, I mean, no one's going to believe that. And so it's going to come off. And even in UFC, her promos, you know, or not her promos, but her talking about her fights, she almost came off as heelish. You know, and not to the general public, but people kind of like us, like we kind of saw it and we're like, I don't need to go that way. OK, that's fine. And in wrestling, it's going to kind of come off as a whiny. It's going to kind of come off as I don't have heel example, but it's going to come off whiny, basically. The Miz. That's who I was thinking of. And she's going to be the female Miz. after a while if she does the same style of promos that she did in the UFC.
So you're saying, though, but if she sticks around WWE for like 10 years, she'll be like the most over guy in the company?
Yeah, exactly. She'll be in a ladder match with Jerry Lawler, and it'll be a great fight.
With the things that Lawler says publicly, I think there's a lot of women who would love to see Ronda Rousey in a ladder match against Jerry Lawler.
That'd be great. Hey, do you think if you had to pick one, is she going to be, because you were talking about athletes who joined the WWE or wrestling in general. Now I'm going to throw a WCW reference in there. Is she going to be the Karl Malone or the Dennis Rodman?
I actually think she fits the Dennis Rodman profile a lot better. Her personality kind of fits with what – she always had that wrestling personality. She obviously was a fan. She fits it well, but then I think when the bell rings, there might be some issues. Whereas Malone, you don't think of him as like a WWE or WCW wrestler, but he was very competent when he got in there, a little underappreciated because he was overshadowed by Rodman and that whole deal.
Yeah, he had a really good diamond cutter.
Yeah. And then remember they were driving the truck and he was the surprise in the back of the truck? I don't know. If we do get like a van pulling up and out comes, you know, what's the surprise? And DDP can be driving it and out comes Ronda Rousey. That they might have something there.
I'm just not looking forward to seeing her entourage, too. Like all the other MMA people who she's going to bring along with her.
That's another aspect about this. I feel bad for Shayna Baszler because I don't think she's going to be judged correctly of how good she is or isn't. I think it'll be an extreme one way or the other. People like her style. I like her style. It's not my favorite because sometimes she doesn't move at all. But she has a cool shoot fighting style that I wish more fighters would successfully translate into wrestling. And she's been hyped on the last few episodes of NXT as she's coming in soon. But whatever push she gets, people are always going to resent her, thinking that it's completely tied to whatever Ronda Rousey does. And I think that's going to be a big issue for her. I feel for her specifically in that situation. The other two, it's just because Ronda has three friends and there's four women in the WWE that were pretty tight. So they're on there completely for that ride. And we don't know if any of them can work. I mean, if they're going to be a 4-on-4 match and you got to think that Rousey would get the big spot at the end, but it's probably going to be Shayna Baszler working with the four horsewomen of WWE for a long stretch of that match.
Yeah, absolutely. She's going to be the workhorse, so to speak, in that equation right there. It's going to be rough for her. I, in general, don't like Shayna Baszler, but I do feel bad, like you said, that she's going to be looked at like that.
Okay, let's close on one topic that's completely wrestling-based. Everything we've talked about has been MMA and wrestling interacting and combining. What do you think the biggest wrestling story of 2018 is going to be?
Roman Reigns. I think what happens ends up happening with Roman Reigns is going to be the biggest story, whether he turns heel, if he beats Brock Lesnar, and then I think the side stories will be, you know, New Japan and if the Young Bucks can end up pulling that 10,000-seat show off.
The 10,000-seat show, I think, is an interesting story. I just don't know that it's going to be a top-of-the-mind story. But if it happens, I think that might change. Then, you know, people will stand and take notice that – will it be the knock that indie wrestling just appeals to a small, very niche group of people? Or is there more to this than what we've been led to believe all these years? And then for my biggest WWE wrestling story of 2018, excuse me, I think the saga of Daniel Bryan, whatever happens with him, will be the most newsworthy thing. Mm-hmm. If he wrestles in the WWE, that's going to look really weird. I don't know if it's good or bad. It's just weird that they took such a hard line against him not wrestling. And I think once you take that hard line as a corporation that they are, it's hard to ever go back on that hard line. But if they do that, that's interesting. Now, if they don't let him wrestle, which is what the more conventional wisdom says, despite what's been going on recently, he will be a free agent later this year. And I think that'll be huge to see how much a top star can translate their stardom onto the indies in this current landscape. Look, Cody has done very well. Cody Rhodes, Cody Reynolds on the independent circuit, but he's not even a fraction of the popularity or the TV exposure that someone like Daniel Bryan has had. And we never got to see a guy like CM Punk take his newfound fame to the indies. So I am just really intrigued to see how much his free agency plays into the future of independent wrestling. He is sort of the godfather of that genre in many, many ways. So I'm curious to see how he looks there, how much of that WWE audience can he bring there. Can he bring a guy guys, people that only really saw him in the WWE, can he bring them to independent wrestling? Or does he keep wrestling in the WWE? Either one of those are extremely fascinating, and we're going to get one of those storylines that's going to play out in 2018.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because my biggest story and your biggest story are kind of coinciding. If he wrestles in the WWE, will that take away from Roman Reigns? So would they be like, well, he's huge. We know he's huge. We're going to let him wrestle, but we also know we can't control his popularity. We tried to put him up with Bray Wyatt. That didn't work. You know, we tried to settle him in a tag team. That didn't work. Is it easier just to let him go and worry about whatever happens? I mean, to let Chris Jericho go, even though he's not as popular as Bryan Danielson. And do they just see where the chips fall, and do the chips fall in New Japan? And does that finally make people pay attention?
Right. And I hadn't even considered the Roman Reigns aspect to it, because a big part of Roman Reigns' whole issues is just the existence of Daniel Bryan. I think if Daniel Bryan wouldn't have been a guy that had been as popular as he was back in 2015, I don't think Roman would get nearly the backlash that he's gotten over the years. So that's interesting. Those two stories inadvertently sort of are very connected to each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And then what do you hope happens with Daniel Bryan? Do you hope he doesn't wrestle? Do you hope he wrestles in WWE, or do you hope he goes elsewhere?
I have a weird take on this, because I hope that WWE does not clear him. I would love to see him. I just don't think, as a business, they should make that decision to clear him to wrestle. It sets such an awful precedent, and I think it's something that could really come back to bite them years later. So I hope he gets released, gets to have one big match on the Indies or New Japan, Ring of Honor, wherever it is, and then I would like to see him just call it a career after that. I think he needs to get that last match out of his system for his psyche, but I fear for him. I fear that even though maybe his career shouldn't have ended because of his medical prognosis, I don't think it was maybe so unfounded that there's not something going on there. He wrestled such a hard style that I don't want to see him be one of these guys that really struggles later in his life because of what he did to himself when he was younger. But at the same time, I hope he's not a guy that's going to be so regretful because he did have his prime ripped from him. So I'm kind of playing both sides of the fence there.
Yeah, no, I'm in complete agreement. I think that if he has one more match, you know, like in the WWE, if they let him get it out of the system, I hope they just pair him up with, you know, Samoa Joe or something and say, we're not going to put on WrestleMania, but you can be on the main event of one of our B-show pay-per-views. Go at it. You know, and just he gets to go do a ROH-style main event that he used to do back in the mid-2000s. And then just get it out of his system and go. Because I see an initial interest if he goes to New Japan or something like that. And I'm not personally convinced he does go back to Ring of Honor. Because he didn't go back to Ring of Honor when they fired him after the Nexus angle. You know, he had some disagreements with him there before, even though Ring of Honor is what I associate him with.
Yeah, well, Gabe's not there anymore either, so that probably plays big into it.
Yeah, yeah. And if you guys, if anyone out there hasn't seen Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson, whatever, fight in Ring of Honor, like when he was going against Morishima or when he was going against Nigel McGuinness and stuff like that, you're missing out. So if he ends up never coming back in the biggest story is that he decided to stay retired permanently, and you're bummed about that, that's okay. Just go back and watch those matches because they're incredible.
I think the ROH YouTube channel actually has that like hour-long match he did with Roddy Strong back in the day, which is phenomenal.
Oh, is that the one where he turned Roderick Strong's chest into roast beef? Oh, that one is phenomenal. I think his Morishima matches, he has a good one against Alex Shelley, but I love the one he had against Lance Storm. He had a really good match against Lance Storm, I think the best in the world or something. Like, that was the peak of my wrestling fandom at one point, was watching all those ROH DVDs.
Wow.
So good.
So since we're talking about mid-2000s Ring of Honor, I think it might be time that we put this show in the can and move on to 2018. Yeah. Rick, where can people – I know you don't do a lot on social media, but where can people find you other places online? You got any writing coming up, anything you want to plug?
Yeah, I think I'm going to get more involved in writing some articles. So just look out for Monzi's take down the road. And hopefully I'll be with you guys again on a podcast pretty soon.
Yeah, we definitely want to have you on. Any thoughts on posters? Because that's kind of what your gimmick is with an MMA talk. Oh, I forgot to ask you about
that.
Okay. Yeah, give your poster take quickly.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, for the future or for the past? Because I got some favorites in 2017. I can give you three.
Give those and then give a prediction or just three of the past and put them on the future.
Okay, cool. Well, GSP Bisming is a good collector's item for UFC 217 for all of you out there. Obviously, we got the John Jones UFC 214. Incredible poster. And even though it was a lame duck poster initially, Mayweather-McGregor, the boxing fight, it looks good in the house.
Oh, really? You've come around on that?
I have, yeah.
And anything in the future you're really looking forward to as far as posters go?
Yeah. I think that this one coming up, the Holly Holm Cyborg one, is going to be pretty cool. I've seen it already. I like it. And I think one thing I didn't get to mention to you guys, the events I'm looking to in the future and everything, but I think whatever ends up being the MSG show that they're going to, seems like they're doing annually now, whatever that card is, it's going to be a pretty cool poster.
Yeah, the color scheme on the Cyborg Holm one is very cool. Just it kind of jumps out at you.
It is.
All right, and you can follow me on Twitter at Rob M. Vallejos. That's RobMVallejos. Mostly wrestling and MMA talk with some other pop culture stuff snuck in between there. And you can follow the brand at MMA Torch and follow all the related sites, MMA Torch, PW Torch, PW Podcast, PW Torch Livecast. For Zach and Robert, this has been a great show. It's been a long show. Let's have a great 2018, guys. See you later.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and Sure Dog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. Now